Good morning. It's 9:04. Time for the business hour, as we do every weekday morning here on Hot Talk 1510.
And so what do? We seek out the smartest people in the country. We call them up. We say, we need you on the radio show to share your wisdom and knowledge with our audience. And so the objective is to suck their brains dry of knowledge. And we've got a really smart guy. His name is Mitch Guzet. He's a recognized expert in marketing, innovation and leadership, strategic positioning, customer relations. Mitch Guzet has addressed groups throughout the world. He's the author of a few different books. I like the one, It's Not Rocket Science. It's a book on marketing. There's the secrets to selling more near and dear to your heart and value acceleration. So calling from the great state of California, Mitch Guzet. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. And if you're going to suck my brains dry, this, I guess it'll be a very short show. So hope you guys have some fill-in.
You better prepare, all right? Because it might hurt at the end of this 30 minutes.
I'm loving it.
All right, good. All right, listen, we're going to come out of the gates. I want to talk about this book, It's Not Rocket Science. And tell us a little bit about this book.
Well, it was my first marketing book, and I originally wrote it based upon 100 presentations that I gave to CEOs and entrepreneurs over a five-year period, and I've continually updated it. We just updated it again last year. It's basically a book about marketing for mid-sized companies. Once you've gotten beyond the sole proprietorship and you're looking at really trying to build a company that's going to last, we talk to you about everything from strategic planning, marketing planning on the front end, to advertising and execution on the back end. And what we discovered was there really weren't any books out there that did that. There are a lot of tactical books for real small companies about putting flyers on cars. And then there's, of course, those boring academic books that you got to read if you want to pass the class. But in between, there really wasn't a comprehensive book on marketing for the entrepreneur, mid-sized company, to help them really know what to do. And that's what we did with Rocket Science, and we based it upon 100 real-life presentations to real-life CEOs who thought it was good stuff.
All right, let's talk about those mid-size entrepreneurs. All right, so those businesses will come out of the gates. Maybe let's say I've got 25 employees. All right,
so
things are starting to kick. So maybe, you know, I'm somewhere between small business and mid-size, but I'm starting to pump some cash. Things are going well, but unfortunately, a down economy hits.
Yeah.
Right, and I've got to start slashing my budgets. And I look to advertising, I look to marketing as a spot where I can pick up some money on the balance sheet. Am I making a big mistake in doing that?
Well, I certainly think so. But, you know, it's interesting, and obviously we're hopefully coming out of this current one, but in January of this year, I read an article that said that most companies were going to hold steady with their R&D investment or perhaps increase it a bit, and yet most companies were going to cut their marketing expenses. Now, you notice there's two different words in those sentences. R&D is looked at as an investment.
Yeah.
Marketing is looked at as an expense. Well, I'm a big fan of cutting expenses. I think expenses suck. But if you're spending on marketing, I think you're making a big mistake. Marketing should be an investment in the company. And that doesn't mean all investments pay off, and that doesn't mean all investments are the right investments. But if all you're doing is spending on marketing, I'd cut it to zero personally. But if you can flip your brain around and start thinking about what am I trying to do with my marketing investment? What am I trying to accomplish? And how will I tell, as one of my partners likes to say, am I getting closer to the end or just further from the beginning? And if I can do some things that will help me accomplish my goal, I should do more of that. And, of course, in a downturn, everybody's got the mentality to cut their marketing expense. So if you can hold your marketing investment steady or increase it, you're going to kick butt when things come back around, which they're starting to do.
Mitch, you kind of talk about the mindset. I think when a small business owner or just an entrepreneur in general is kind of coming out of the gates, and maybe they've got 20, maybe they've got 100 employees, when the economy turns, they start to weigh out all the expenses. And I'll just throw out a couple out there. I know that, you know, everybody out there is trying to figure out, hey, what's going to be in my advertising budget this year? Do I spend the incremental, you know, $10,000 on Yellow Pages this year? What am I going to do in internet advertising? And how do they get their mindset away from looking at that as a cost? And you say it's an investment, but they don't look at it that way initially, do they?
No, they sure don't. And you know, the reality is I wish it was just a small company or mid-sized company problem, but it's a problem in big companies. Big companies are doing exactly the same thing because for the last 50 years, marketing has been viewed as magic. And don't ask me any questions. It's too many variables. Can't know what's going on. It's all about creativity and how the wizard works the formula in the back room. And marketing has gotten away with undisciplined expenditure. In fact, the biggest criticism that the CEO will often make of the marketing program is where to put the tree in the ad. You know, if you just move the tree slightly to the left, the ad will pull better. And we focus on all the wrong things. And my question is, what are you trying to accomplish? I'll tell you a quick story. I was meeting with an entrepreneur last week, and he's got an opportunity to get a huge billboard. This is the biggest billboard I've ever seen, for a fraction of what billboards would normally cost in his city. He's never run billboards before, and he was asking my opinion about whether or not I thought taking a six-month flyer on this billboard for about 20 grand, which the billboard normally costs 20 grand a month, he was getting 6 months for 20 grand, did I think that was a good idea? Well, in the scheme of things, that was a trivial amount of money in his overall budget, but still don't want to waste it. So what we laid out was, what do you want to accomplish with this billboard, and how will you know if it worked? Well, the first obvious thing was, he needs to invest in a separate phone number so that when people call off the billboard, he'll know it came off the billboard.
Right.
And so simple things like two simple questions. What are you trying to accomplish with this tactic, whether it be advertising, yellow pages, internet, direct mail, whatever, and how will you know if it worked well enough to do it again? You know, people get hung up on, I can't tell you to six decimal points how good of a deal it was. I don't care. What I really want to know is, directionally, should you keep moving in that direction, or is that not a good way to go? And if you can just block yourself into a thinking that says, did this help me, do nothing, or worse, hurt me? And if it helps you, you can keep doing it.
You know, another thing that comes to mind right there is you talk about that billboard display and kind of thinking through that. A question that I know you probably go through with them is, how do you know, what are going to be the measurables to you to decide if it didn't work? And what do you do if it didn't work? I mean, do you throw it out? Do you say, hey, we think this is a six-month time frame before we're going to see an ROI on it, but you've got to kind of decide up front, here's what we're going to use to determine if this was a success or not.
Perfect question. And of course, that comes down to buying process. And you guys focusing on selling, you understand that it's all about how long does it take the customer to move through the steps they need to move through to go from not thinking about you at all to buying from you. And of course, the great salespeople help the customer do that. Well, the question in this particular case, and really in most cases with marketing, is how long is the buying process? Are we focused on people who don't know us and trying to help them get to know us? Are we focused on reminding current customers to keep shopping with us? Or are we focused on trying to recover lost customers? And depending upon which one of those things is the primary use, helps you to know. So in his business, for example, the buying process is relatively short. From recognizing a need to buying from him was 45 days max, really probably 30 more realistically. So in truth, he had potentially six buying cycles to measure the results of that billboard, which is plenty of time to determine whether or not that particular billboard, and it was a one-of tactic. It was the only billboard like it in town. It was at an interesting location, not necessarily the best for him, but it was a way for him to test economically whether billboards would even work at all. So he had two things going on. One was, do billboards work and should I do more of them? And what I want from the billboard is for the phone to ring and for me to see whether or not qualified people are on the other end, and then can I convert them or not.
And you know what? I love what you just said there. It's thinking about the objective of every marketing campaign that you do, right? And the key word being objective. Now, and I teach this in my sales course, Mitch, is, you know, there is a difference between a lame sales and marketing objective and a good one. And in my world, I believe it's a good objective is thinking about what you want the buyer to do by the end of either a sales call or viewing a billboard, right? What you want the buyer to do as a result of the dollar you just spent or the sales call you meant. And often the folks I work with, and I'm sure Tim deals with this and you do no doubt, will ask the question, what is the objective of your campaign? And you'll hear fluffy things like, well, we want to spread the word. We want to capture more mind share. Well, what does that mean, right? It's and you have to hit them between the eyes and say, no, What do you want that person viewing the board to do as a result of them looking at that today, right? Or in the next 30 or 45 days. So marketing dollars mean nothing. Sales calls mean nothing unless they create action that is measurable.
You got it. And the truth of the matter is, spreading the word around and increasing mind share, I guarantee you, makes a whole lot of money for advertising agencies and the media that is displaying your ad. But whether it does you any good or not, hard to know. And I can't imagine why anybody in an up economy or a down economy would do that. You know, if you're cutting your spending in a down economy, when I ask people why they do that, they say because they didn't know if it was working. And I just look at them, and the suggestion is, you don't mind if it's not working when the economy's up.
Yeah.
And if that's true, you know, send your money to me or my new friends Brian and Jim, and they'll be happy to take it.
We certainly will.
I'll capture your mind share and your wallet share. All right, listen, we're going to take a short commercial break. When we come back, I want to switch gears into another one of your books called Value Acceleration. I'm very curious, what the heck is value acceleration, and how do I accelerate mine and Tim's value? Hey, come on back. You're listening to Hot Talk 5010, KCTE. Oh, yeah. Okay, this is kind of nice. It's Monday morning, right? Come on, Timmy.
It's peppy.
It's a little peppy, huh? He won't play the slow music for us anymore.
No.
I asked for a little Weekend in New England from Barry Manilow.
You know, that whenever I hear this music, it reminds me of a different radio station used to always play this at 5 o'clock hour every day.
Sure.
And it always reminds me of that.
Yeah. And you know, Mr. Rooney, Timmy and I were fortunate enough to be at the St. Michael's Church extravaganza Saturday night.
We did.
And we were dancing around just things like this, weren't we?
Together?
He didn't want to dance much. He kind of sat there, you know, just kind of with his arms crossed.
He was the DJ.
Music.
I was doing the music.
But what was I doing, Timmy?
You were dancing.
I was like Millie Vanilli.
You were
okay?
Crazy. I looked over and I actually thought Sully was having a spasm or something. I tried to go help him and give him mouth to mouth, and that was a big mistake.
That's where you got that thing on your lip.
Welcome back to Hot Talk 5010 KCTE. We're having a great time with Mitchell Guze. He's a recognized expert in marketing. We're talking marketing innovation, and we had a great chat about what's the difference between marketing investment and marketing spend, and how mentally you got to get your arms around. Spending money in marketing is great, but only if you think of your objective and how you quantify the ROI. And what a great simple lesson. Hey, you know what? It's not rocket science, Mitch.
There you go.
Hey, look at that! How is that for a tie-in? All right, listen. Hey, now I want to switch gears because another one of your books called Value Acceleration. What the heck does that mean?
Well, the book is all about how to build real value long-term in a business. And we've looked for years at what does marketing and sales do differently than the rest of business. And what we discovered was that every other aspect of business has been dragged kicking and screaming over the years into managing the activity as a business process. And marketing really is the last area in business that is still resisting business process. Now, I have to be careful about talking about business process because people go, oh, my God, I think I'll go to sleep. Or he's talking about bureaucracy. He's talking about slowing stuff down. And the reality is that every activity in the world that matters, whether it be a trauma center or where they see emergency cases, or whether it be special forces teams behind enemy lines, they all work with a process. That process is flexible and adaptable so that it meets the needs of the situation. But it's not about what do you think we're going to do now, what do you guess we ought to do, let's do it differently today and see how much fun that is. And that works for you guys, apparently, at St. Michael's. But in general, when we're trying to run a business, you know, we're trying to do things in a way that gets better all the time. And value acceleration is about manufacturing customers, creating loyal, profitable, repeat customers on purpose.
All right, because I love this talk of repeatability and process. And you are so right in the fact that certainly in the world Tim and I live in, the sales world, and which applies to the marketing world, is there is this battle between process versus creativity. There's no way you could be innovative and creative and still be bound by the bureaucratic processes. How can we convince the folks that without process, you in fact cannot be innovative and creative?
So, I mean, that's a fantastic question. And there was an article in the Harvard Business Review back in March where a couple of allegedly smart guys out of Dartmouth wrote an article that said precisely that, that there are artistic processes that cannot be amenable to process. And I just went ballistic and wrote an article rebuttal. But the whole idea here is that some belief that process needs to be bureaucratic, that processes are rigid. And in some cases, processes need to be rigid. It would be nice if the car you buy off an assembly line was built exactly the way it was intended to be built every single time. That process is relatively rigid. But a process to get R&D done, a process to create new ideas, a process to do innovative things cannot be rigid by definition. Yeah. What you need is an understanding that good processes are appropriately flexible and appropriately adaptable. A manufacturing production line process is fairly rigid, but because it needs to be. A innovation process, a brainstorming process, a creativity process must, in fact, be highly flexible and adaptable because the outcome you're looking for is not defined precisely. It's defined by its goodness, not by its precision. You'll know a good idea potentially when you see one. You know a good manufactured widget, if you will, when you see one. One takes a rigid process, the other takes a flexible.
Well, and I think that a huge value of process in anything, for instance, with the content I speak of is sales process. And as you know, salespeople are so reluctant to the rigidity that comes with these are the things you must say, right? They don't like that. They think it's God-given talent that makes them be effective at selling this product or service. And but if I can take someone who's got the moxie, who's got the great attitude, enthusiasm, creativity, innovation, and make them repeatable through a process, all it does is it allows them to take their greatest day, their greatest sales call, and allow them to do it over and over again. And so process, to me, allows you to learn from every experience because you can then evaluate the process. You can go back and say, I did this well. I did this. I didn't do this well. And that's in manufacturing, and that's in soft skills as well. Because if you can't identify what you do well and did not do well, how can you ever improve your business or yourself, right?
That's exactly right. One of the golden rules of process is feedback. And the faster you can get feedback, the faster you can improve. If I don't tell you what the results of your sales activities are for 1.5 years, and I tell you, by the way, you didn't do very well, and the next feedback you can get 1.5 years from now, you could die of starvation before you get it right. If I can give you feedback every day, in 20 days, you can be fantastic.
Oh, you're good.
And the whole thing with process is building rapid feedback into it so that you maximize the things that work and you minimize the things that don't work. And what you've, of course, figured out is that there are lots of things that are known to work in sales, and that doesn't make it rigid. That makes it work.
But it also has to be a process you buy into, right?
Absolutely.
And so, once again, in the sales world, if we can get folks, well, and this applies to anything. I don't care what department you're in. Think of the repeatable way you should perform without stifling the flexibility that might be necessary, right? But create that process and then constantly evaluate yourself how you're doing. For instance, Precise is my company. Precise is the process for how am I preparing, building respect and trust, blah, blah, blah. But the point is if this process becomes yours, you don't need a leader, a manager to be watching you. Your brain and the process will keep you on track, and that's where your subtle improvements will be made. So I just think I love it. Timmy, you had something, did you?
No, I think what I liked about what you both just said right there was the fact that certainly as the salesperson, the number one quantifiable expectation is, did you close the business? But there's a lot of factors that come into that, and it doesn't necessarily, the measurables don't always mean did I get the deal. There's a lot of checkpoints along the way. Did you establish the respect and trust? Did you get those things? And it requires feedback, and it requires listening not only to what your peers are telling you, but look at the reaction and the facial expressions you get from your client, your customer, your prospect, and you'll know if you're doing those things. But it doesn't always need to be a closed deal. There could have been other factors.
Right, because the only thing I think in business you can control is your performance, right? To your point, Tim, that there's outside factors, right? But if you can go back and say, I did this, I did this, I didn't do this, once again, that's all you got, right, Mitch?
That's
you can
exactly
just
right.
control you.
Hey, some of the best referrals I've ever gotten and other people have ever gotten have been from people who chose not to buy from me or from them for the right reasons. As much as we think everybody should buy from us, in truth, everybody shouldn't buy from us. And the ones that shouldn't, and we help them figure out where they should buy, generally are our best referrals from that day forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. All right, so let's talk about bottlenecks, because you mentioned that in this value acceleration book. What type of bottlenecks do you run into, or should I be aware of?
Well, let me just make sure everybody's clear on bottlenecks real quick, which is every system has bottlenecks in it. If you're crossing a bridge, the bottleneck is the bridge, not the road that leads up to the bridge, generally speaking. Figuring out where the bottleneck is and applying resources to the bottleneck is how you increase the throughput of a system. Most people, when they're short of sales, their bottleneck approach is they get a bunch of folks in a conference room, take out a flip chart, and start guessing what they think the bottleneck is, and then they do whatever the person with the most votes in the room decides to do, or whatever worked last time, or whatever they feel like doing, and hope is their strategy. What you really want to do, and there's a great book that's been around for over 20 years called The Goal, G-O-A-L. It's written by Eliyahu Goldratt, and it's about constraint theory or bottleneck theory, and it's about the idea that you need to identify truly where the bottleneck is. Most companies think the bottleneck is in sales, but you know, in the work that we've done over the years, what we have discovered is that the number one bottleneck in most companies is that the salespeople have never been trained as to what makes their product or service truly different in the marketplace and what category of customers really want that. So the sales force wanders around the countryside hoping they might stumble across a buyer and luckily say the right thing to that buyer at the right time to get a sale, and it's a random event. The top bottleneck, in our opinion, is lack of understanding of value proposition and lack of understanding of who to target for the sales force to be successful.
And of course, if you had a process, you wouldn't have that problem, would you?
You got it.
All right. Hey, listen, Mitch, give us your website, because I'm a fan, my friend. I want Mitch Guze stuff. I want e-newsletters, blogs. I want the books. Where can I learn more?
The website is www.customermanufacturing.com. And if you're lazy, you can spell manufacturing by its abbreviation, MFG. So customermfg.com. That will help you find our blog, the book site on value acceleration, and you can, of course, sign up for our e-zine on the site.
And you can always do a Google search on Mitch Guze. That's G-O-O-Z-E. Am I right?
You got it.
Hey, Mitch, you were fun today. Thanks for calling in so bright and early from Cali.